Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 120 event, which takes place in Norfolk, Virginia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 0.98 units for UFC 217 after going 1-1 on our premium bets. We also won 1.6 units on our free bet on James Vick. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 120 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now kicking things off on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Darren Stewart, who is 7-1 with one no contest, and Carl Roberson, who is 5-0. Now Nick, where did you open this fight and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Roberson -190, the comeback on Stewart at +150, and that's at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. So as always, make sure you check those guys out. And right now over at Five Dimes, it is currently Roberson at -225, the comeback on Stewart at +185. So a little bit more action coming in Roberson's way. I'm not really that surprised. I mean, based on his Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series performance and the hype and the buzz around Roberson, I figured the action would go his way a little bit. And let's face it, Stewart had a lackluster official, I'm going to say official debut, because obviously the first fight that he had with Brasso got kind of cut short and became a no contest or whatever. So the rematch, he ended up losing there. So a lot of hype entering his UFC debut for Stewart, but that hype got derailed a little bit with his loss. Now that doesn't mean Stewart isn't going to be a fighter, I should say, to watch out for, especially in the middleweight division. He is dropping to middleweight for the first time in his career, and the guy is definitely an athlete. I mean, with a ton of power, he's got obviously a decent judo and he's got some wrestling and takedowns and some nasty ground and pound if he does get on top. So he's got big power, and a good clinch game. And he just, you know, has that type of game that he wants to get the fight to the floor, get you down and just finish you on the ground. Now, also if it stays on the feet, I mean, that's kind of not his bread and butter, but he does have enough power to do some damage there. But in this fight against Roberson, that is exactly Roberson's bread and butter. He's a striker. I mean, that's his background. He's a glory striker, to be exact. I mean, and glory kickboxing is, in my opinion, the world's most elite kickboxing organization there is out there. So he has top-notch experience in kickboxing. And I mean, the guy is definitely an elite level striker. He works with Corey Anderson and crew, on his MMA game. So he has a pretty decent team around him with some wrestlers, and his takedown defense, you could tell, is getting better and it's improving. So he's a kickboxer that actually has a complete MMA game. He even has some submissions to go along with it. So there's a lot to like about Roberson here. And again, this is at middleweight. So I think that he's going to be a little bit faster, a little bit stronger in the middleweight division. I think both these guys can make the cut okay and carry their power with them in this weight class. So again, Roberson was basically found on Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. He had an impressive quick finish of Ryan Spann in that matchup there. And Spann is not exactly an easy out. So that was an impressive win. So again, the hype right now between these two is on Roberson. The action is coming that way as well. It's a tough fight to bet at the betting window though, for sure, because there's just too many question marks around both guys. Really, they're so new in their careers, their MMA careers, at least. I mean, Roberson's only 5-0, excuse me. Stewart's 7-1. So they still got a lot of room to grow. I mean, they're 26 years old, 27 years old. These guys are going to improve and get better with each fight. So I mean, sky's the limit for each one of them, really. We'll see how it plays out. But I'm going to lean towards Roberson right now. I do think he has enough takedown defense to keep this fight upright. And if he does, he should outstrike Stewart. So that's the pick, Roberson.
Yeah, there's definitely some intangibles in this fight. Stewart dropping down to middleweight is interesting because he didn't exactly have the best run in light heavyweight with the performances against Barroso. And Roberson, this guy is downright nasty on the feet. I mean, coming from the kickboxing background, you would expect that, but I mean, he destroyed Span on the Tuesday Night Contender Series. He's a guy that I'm legitimately excited about for making his UFC debut. Now, Stewart, I definitely feel like he has some flaws. I mean, I was not impressed one bit by his rematch against Barroso. It seemed like the only reason he beat Barroso in the first place was because of that headbutt that rocked him and hurt him and set up the finish, which got overturned. So, I think as long as Roberson can keep this fight upright, and he should, because Stewart doesn't really have much of a ground game or takedown game with offensive wrestling, then I think it's only a matter of time before Roberson catches Stewart and knocks him out. So Roberson, even though Stewart's dropping down to the middleweight division, Roberson, I believe, is dropping down too, because he fought at light heavyweight on the Contender Series, and he's actually going to be 3 inches taller, and, you know, a guy with a kickboxing background should be able to use a reach advantage as well, a height or reach advantage. So I like Roberson. I like his power. I like his potential, and I'm looking forward to seeing him develop, and I think he gets a victory here on Saturday. So my pick is Roberson. Now, moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Jake Collier, who is 10-4, taking on Marcel Fortuna, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have Fortuna -215, the comeback on Collier at +165. Right now, over five times, is Fortuna -240. Collier is at +200. So line margins have tightened up, and a little bit more action coming in Fortuna's way as well. Nothing crazy. There is some two-way action, like I said, overall. That's a tough fight as well, because Collier's one of those guys that, in my opinion, I mean, he can be better than what he's currently performing at. I mean, the guy has all the tools. He's got the height. He's got the length. He's got some power. I mean, for the light heavyweight division, this guy can be a force. It's just, I think his fight IQ at times, his conditioning at times, his chin at times. I mean, he does have those flaws, and those flaws kind of bring him back down to reality a little bit. And that's why I think this is going to be a very difficult fight. I opened Fortuna 2-1 favorite for a reason. I believe it's fair. And obviously the betting action coming in that way, a lot of people believe it's fair as well. Fortuna is one of these guys that's more well known for his grappling game, but in all honesty, I mean, his stand-up game's improving to the point where he's dangerous even on the feet. He can take you down as well. So the guy has takedowns. He's got a pretty decent power on the feet, and he's got a good jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. So I think for Collier, he can't afford to make too many mistakes in this spot. I mean, again, with the athleticism Collier has and the length that he has, I mean, he presents a lot of problems to most fighters. But the problem is, I think eventually Fortuna's going to find his groove. He's going to settle into the fight, and he's going to be able to exploit some of those weaknesses I was just talking about with Collier. So for me, I just think stylistically it's a tough matchup for Collier, and I think Fortuna's probably going to get the nod, more than likely inside. But if not, if it even hits the scorecards, I still got to favor Fortuna as well. So the pick's Fortuna for me.
Fortuna, for me, is the more well-rounded fighter of the two. I mean, he entered the UFC with a bit of a grappling background, most of his wins by submission, and instead, he's been striking with people in his first two fights for the most part. I mean, he had an impressive knockout of Anthony Hamilton in his short-notice UFC debut at heavyweight, and then dropped down and took on a really good wrestling prospect in Jordan Johnson at light heavyweight, which was a tough fight for him, and he came out on the losing end, but he did land some decent strikes in that fight. So this time around against Collier, I think Fortuna can hold his own on the feet, although Collier is going to be dangerous there. He has power with his kicks and his hands, and Collier is pretty decent in the clinch, so Fortuna can't screw around on the feet, because I could potentially see Collier hurting him or doing something and doing some damage and potentially getting a finish in the stand-up. But where Collier might have some trouble is the ground, actually. He's been taken down in his last four or five fights, and it's been the reason he lost two of them. So I would say if Fortuna can go back to his roots a little bit, I mean, more than half of his victories are by submission, I think he could put Collier on his back and keep him there and get a submission or at least a decision victory. So my pick is going to be Marcel Fortuna as well. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division for the Fight Pass headliner, we have Court McGee, who is 19-6, taking on Sean Strickland, who is 18-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Strickland, -210, the comeback on McGee at +160. Right now, looking over five dimes, -265 for Strickland, and McGee is at +225. So again, more action coming in the favorite's way from 2-1 to about 2.5-1 or so. Again, I agree with it. I think Strickland is basically right now, I mean, it's 2017, the end of 2017. McGee's been around the sport for quite a while. And I mean, he's been a very solid fighter. In fact, he's been an underrated fighter, but I think at age 32 with the fight years and everything, you know, that's gone on in McGee's personal life, I mean, through the, you know, that's been documented as well. I think he's come to the point where he is on the decline, honestly, a little bit. He's just not looking as sharp as crisp. Now he's hanging in there. Even in his losses recently, I think that he's been performing actually okay. And I mean, there've been some competitive decisions. Even with the last one with Ben Saunders, I mean, that was a unanimous decision win from Saunders, but that was a very close fight that could have realistically went either way. The Steele fight was a little bit disappointing for McGee because you would expect better. I mean, Dominic Steele's a tough out. I'm not going to knock him at all. I think he's a very decent fighter, but I think McGee, you know, should be above that level as well. So there's definitely something going on with McGee. He's not what he was. I mean, the guy that fought Robert Whittaker and beat Whittaker a few years back is not what we're seeing here in McGee in 2017. So that's what I'm saying. Now, Strickland's the young gun here. I mean, he's the one that's kind of, you know, the people expect him to be actually, you know, a contender eventually at 170 pounds. I mean, the problem with Strickland at times is, I mean, it's his inactivity. He needs to put his foot on the gas and be a little bit more aggressive. That's what kind of hinders him at times in fights. But here against McGee, I think he's going to be able to at least pick his spots enough that he's going to do some damage against McGee along the way. And I think that damage is going to amount to clearly Strickland winning a few rounds, if not even finishing McGee along the way. So in his last fight for Strickland, I mean, it was disappointing because he did get, you know, suffer a loss, but it was against Usman. Usman is a very tough out in the welterweight division. I mean, he's in line pretty much. He's in the realm at least for a title shot. I mean, he's trying to get himself another matchup that will put him in that spot. But Usman's one of the best wrestlers we know at 170 pounds. I mean, he's just one of the toughest outs right now. So it's a respectable loss for Strickland for sure. But before that, I mean, Strickland, you could tell he was, you know, finding his groove. He had a impressive win over Garcia and Breeze. I think that Strickland is one of those guys that has improved and gotten better fight by fight, but still he needs to keep his foot on the gas at times, and he has to find that killer instinct and just, you know, be able to put the hammer down when he needs to. So I think he will be able to do that. I think he's going to turn the corner hopefully here because, again, with his improvement, with his time in the octagon, he is going to be a little bit more comfortable. And again, McGee's not going to be an easy out, but I think right now the decline factor for McGee with, I think, the rise of Strickland overall, it's just a tough matchup for McGee to win. I mean, McGee's going to have to really wrestle him, put Strickland on his back and hold him there. I don't think he's going to be able to have success doing so. Even on the feet, McGee has some decent boxing, but I think, again, Strickland will be able to pick him apart and counter well when McGee's pushing forward a little bit. So the pick is Strickland to win here. I do agree with the early action. Now, where it's at right now, I mean, 2.5-1, 260 or so, it's probably tough to bet it. So I would probably pass, but I still think Strickland's going to win. So my pick is Strickland.
Yeah, I'll keep this one simple. I think both of these guys are kind of moving in opposite directions. McGee is, to me, tailing off towards the end of his UFC run. Strickland still has a lot of brightness ahead of him. Granted, Strickland did not have a great performance his last fight, but as Nick mentioned, Usman is a tough out, and I don't know if there's hardly anybody in the welterweight division that could have handled him in that last fight. So I'm not going to give Strickland too much flack for losing that fight. Where you want to give McGee flack is the performance in the Ben Saunders fight, the performance in the Dominic Steele fight, and then, you know, getting crushed by Ponzinibbio. Granted, Ponzinibbio is very good, but we basically have not seen McGee fight well for three fights in a row now, and it's just looking like he's not going to be able to channel the older Court McGee that was able to pick up some pretty quality wins inside the octagon. You know, one of McGee's biggest qualities was pace and durability, and his chin starting to go, and his pace has not been impressive. I mean, the Dominic Steele fight, I know he was a little concerned about takedowns and stuff, but he only landed 15 strikes in that fight. You know, that's just not going to cut it. So, this time around, I just think if Sean Strickland can just keep a decent pace, I think he can outstrike McGee on the feet. He's showcased a pretty good jab in recent fights, especially in the win over Garcia. And I think if Strickland can potentially even get takedowns on McGee, or at least avoid getting taken down, So overall, I just think Strickland is in a better place right now. I think he's got more confidence, and I think that he might even be able to finish McGee along the way if McGee's decline is as legitimate as it appears. So my pick is going to be Sean Strickland. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a women's strawweight contest between Angela Hill, who is 7-3, and Nina Ansaroff, who is 7-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Hill -215, the comeback on Ansaroff at +165. Looking over five times, it's Hill -190, the comeback on Ansaroff still +165. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action is coming on this fight. It is a tough fight. I mean, logic would say the more popular fighter in this spot would be Hill, so she should draw a little bit more action. And we probably will see the line climb a little bit. But truth being said, I mean, Ansaroff is a very tough out. And I think if there's any sharp action that comes in on this fight at all, it's going to probably be on the dog at the dog price with Ansaroff. So that's how much I think she has a shot to win this fight. For me, this is a pick'em type of fight with a slight lean towards Hill because obviously she is the better striker in this spot. I think she's a more technical striker overall. She's a cleaner striker. I think she will have some success on the feet against Ansaroff. I like Ansaroff's aggression at times, though. I think she does have some underrated power on the feet as well. And I think Ansaroff's still the more complete fighter of the two. I think if Ansaroff can get the fight to the floor, which Hill's takedown defense has definitely improved, and it keeps on improving fight by fight, and her ground awareness does as well. But I think still, if Ansaroff gets a takedown, she could do some damage underground, possibly even take Hill's back, and then Hill could be in some trouble as well. But overall, I think this is just going to be a battle everywhere. I mean, Hill's going to be able to stuff some takedowns. I think obviously Hill's going to be able to have success on the feet a little bit as well, but Ansaroff's going to give some back, and it's going to be one of these split decision type of fights, 29-28, competitive decision. So I do think it's a dog or pass situation. There's no doubt about that for Ansaroff. And I do like Hill. Like I said, you guys know me. I mean, I've been on Hill a few times. She's cashed some tickets for me. So I do get it. And I think she is one of these fighters that's on the rise for sure. I just think this is stylistically a tough matchup for Hill as well. So this is a coin flip fight with a slight lean towards Hill. So for right now, I am going to pick Hill. But again, this is another spot where I tell you guys, you know, on the podcast, obviously on the Oddscast, that we do have our MMA Oddsbreaker staff picks that are posted on fight day. And that's where our official picks actually get posted. So after weigh-ins, I could switch back to Ansaroff. I don't know. Again, I've been going back kind of back and forth on this fight. So we'll see. But right now I am leaning towards Hill, but make sure you guys check out the staff picks for my official pick, as they get posted day of the fight.
This boils down to a battle between two strikers. Now, Nina Ansaroff lost her first two fights in the UFC because she faced some opponents that could take her down. And in her last bout, I mean, she faced Liebarger, who did not want to take her down, and Ansaroff just teed off on her over the course of three rounds. I mean, it was a very, very impressive performance. Now, Angela Hill is not going to want to take Ansaroff down, but I think Ansaroff might be getting more than she bargained for with Hill. Hill is a very good striker, very aggressive striker, and has, I think, some pretty good pop in her hands and knees, especially she can be dangerous in the clinch. Now, Ansaroff, she's a bit more of a flashy, diverse striker. She likes to mix in a lot of kicks, spinning attacks. I mean, she's unorthodox. So if this boils down to spacing, I mean, if Ansaroff has some room to tee off and throw a lot of the crazy stuff she likes to throw, she's going to be in a good position to win this fight. If Hill can close the distance and work over with some knees, with some elbows, and get her boxing game going, then I think Hill will have a really good chance to pull this one out. Hill did get, you know, outworked by Jessica Andrade, but I think most fighters, female fighters in the strawweight division would get outworked by Andrade. So I'm not going to hold that against her. It's just this one, she could get outworked if Ansaroff is aggressive and kind of forces Hill to be on her back foot. But if Hill's the aggressor, then I think Ansaroff is going to have some trouble finding space for those unorthodox strikes she likes to throw. So, I'm going to lean Hill, but I mean, this could be a live betting scenario where if Hill's not fighting the way I'm expecting, then, you know, I might try to get something back on Ansaroff. So my pick's Hill, but definitely exercising caution here. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Sage Northcutt, who is 8-2, taking on Mikel Quinones, who is also 8-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Northcutt minus 245, the comeback on Quinones at plus 175. Right now, looking over five dimes, is Northcutt minus 170, the comeback of Quinones at plus 150. So 25-cent drop on the dog, but a bigger drop with the favorite price, of course, because it's down to 170. Early action, it did come in on Quinones. I was a little bit surprised. I mean, Sage Northcutt has a ton of hype still, despite his losses. I mean, he is a fan favorite, and the UFC does seem to love this guy, and they try to hook him up with wins here. But the problem is, I don't know if he's going to get this against Quinones. I understand he's dropping back down to lightweight, which I think is a good idea. I mean, Sage is a big guy for the lightweight, or for the lightweight weight class. But the problem is, I think he's better in that division than obviously he is at 170 pounds. He's actually undefeated at lightweight. He's 2-0. He even has a win at catchweight too. So I think the lighter weight class is definitely a better spot for Northcutt. He could use some of his God-given gifts, really. I mean, you know, he's definitely a strong, athletic guy that has power, that has speed, that, you know, can get the fight to the ground when he needs to. He can strike and hurt you on the feet as well. So Northcutt has skill, and he's been training with some good fighters throughout, you know, throughout his UFC career. He's been in different spots, and he's picked up definitely some good tools and you know, some good advice along the way. So I think the sky's the limit for Northcutt. He's only 21 years old. Let's not forget that as well. But with all that being said, I still think that he's a flawed fighter, and he's not quite up to par with a lot of the solid fighters in the UFC yet. So that's why he's going to suffer some losses. I think Quinones is actually going to beat him here as well. You know, I think the early action on Quinones was justified, to be honest with you. I think, you know, the dog action is the way to go in this spot still, even though Northcutt's going to be the physically bigger, stronger fighter. Quinones in his debut got destroyed by Gordon as well. And I'm still saying this because Quinones is better than what he showed in his UFC debut. And again, that was a featherweight. Now he's at lightweight. Quinones went on record and did say that that was a brutal weight cut for him. And, you know, he didn't feel like himself. So he is going to stay at 155 while he can, because he thinks he's going to feel a little bit better at 155 pounds. So still, Northcutt's going to be the bigger, more physical fighter. I think what it comes down to is a little bit of the conditioning. I think Quinones is going to have a little bit more gas in the tank. I think Quinones is going to have to keep this fight upright, because I know Northcutt's going to probably want to go for some takedowns. Quinones on the feet has some power, and he's got some skill as well. Like I said, the Gordon fight is not a good example of what Quinones can bring to the table. He's better than what he showed there, and I think he's going to kind of prove that in this fight with Northcutt. So to me, this becomes a kind of a striking battle as it goes, and I think Quinones has the advantage if it does become a striking battle. So I'm going to lean with Quinones. Again, you can't be, I guess, underestimate Northcutt that much, because like I said, he does have the physical attributes and he could possibly pull this one win off, but I do think it's a dog pass situation, and I do think Quinones is being a little bit overall underestimated. Even though the early action did come his way, I think overall the public opinion, and we could see this fight still climb back up Northcutt's way as we get closer to fight day, because it's still midweek, so we have a long way to go before fight time with these guys. So with all that being said, Northcutt, the more popular fighter. I still like the dog here. I think the early action, you guys that grabbed it plus 175, I think you guys did a good thing. And we'll see how it all pans out. But the pick is Quinones for me. I think the underdog comes through here as well.
And I have to disagree. You know, Sage Northcutt, he usually beats the guys he's supposed to beat. At the lightweight division, they usually feed him guys that are lower tier in the UFC. And Sage is a great athlete with good power, great speed, and he's still raw for sure, and he's definitely had conditioning issues, but I mean, he is getting training at some of the best gyms around the country. I mean, he worked at TriStar, he's worked at Team Alpha Male, he's worked with other random people, and they're usually raving about what this kid's capable of. Now, yeah, I know, the hype gets a little out of control, but I think this is a situation where Quinones is a guy that Sage is supposed to beat, and he usually comes through against those guys. His problems have been, for the most part, in higher weight classes where guys are hitting a little bit harder, and you know, Sage doesn't have the greatest chin and or the greatest durability, and uses up a lot of energy taking guys down, or gets hit hard and doesn't handle it well. Against Quinones, I'm not as worried about that. I don't think Quinones has that great of a ground game, so I'm not too worried about Sage getting caught in a guillotine or something on a takedown. And while Quinones is mildly dangerous on the feet, I think Sage is so much quicker and more athletic that he probably will land some good kicks and punches along the way before Quinones can kind of get settled into a rhythm. Really, the only way I see Sage losing this fight is if it drags out and Sage slows down and then maybe Quinones could take over and get a finish late. But even there, I think Sage might be able to hang on and get a decision victory. So, I like Sage here. I just think the youth and athleticism are an advantage in this fight, especially with the guy dropping back to lightweight versus somebody moving up to lightweight. I think there's going to be a really big size and strength disparity here. So my pick is going to be Sage Northcutt. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Tatiana Suarez, who is 5-0, taking on Vivian Pereira, who is 13-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Suarez, minus 265. The comeback on Pereira at plus 185. Right now looking for five dimes. Suarez minus 300. The comeback on Pereira is at plus 250. So line margins have tightened up and more action coming in Suarez's way early on. And, you know, this was a difficult line in a way to set because Pereira definitely deserves some respect. I mean, she's looked pretty solid so far in her UFC career, no doubt. And she's a promising, you know, prospect at 115 pounds at age 24. I think that she could potentially be a title contender. So, I mean, setting somebody up as a 2.5-to-1 favorite over what I just said, over somebody that's a promising prospect that's, you know, kind of moving her way up the ladder and opening up Suarez that high. I mean, that says something. I think Suarez is that special. In fact, I think Suarez could potentially wear that strap at 115 pounds. I mean, her wrestling is where it's at. She won the Ultimate Fighter 23 title. Her win over Cooper was very impressive. And unfortunately for her, she got injured. I mean, she hasn't fought since that time because she was supposed to fight Lima at Fight Night 102 and she had to pull out with injury. So that's why we haven't seen her since that time. But she's back and I'm glad she's back because I think she is, again, she's a special type of athlete as well. I think she's just so dominant when she gets a fight to the ground and more times than not, she's able to control and dictate the pace of the fight and get you to the ground when she wants to. Once she's on the ground, I mean, her ground and pound is pretty nasty. She also gets positional control and goes for the submission win as well. So she could do pretty much whatever she wants on the ground with her opponents. Now here she's going to have a huge size advantage over Pereira as well. I mean, she's going to have a height. I mean, obviously Pereira is a strong fighter as well, physically strong, but I still think Suarez is going to kind of outmuscle her and bully her here as well. So I think what happens here, Suarez does get the fight to the ground. And then once she gets Pereira to the ground, I think she could possibly finish. If not, she's going to just repeat and rinse all three rounds. She's going to get the fight to the ground and just kind of, you know, wear Pereira out and just en route to a unanimous decision type of win. So again, I have a ton of respect for Pereira. She's actually made me some cash in the UFC, her short UFC career thus far as well. But I think this fight here, this weekend, is just a bad matchup for her, and I think Suarez is going to come in, get the job done, and then she's going to put herself right back on the map, and you do have to take Suarez serious. I think that she is seriously one of the next big things at 115 pounds of the women's division. I will see her wearing the title one day, barring, you know, further injuries. I think she does wear that strap. So the pick of Suarez, I think she's a special talent, and the sky's the limit for her as well. So we'll see how she does.
I completely agree on the hype with Suarez. I'm not nearly as impressed by Pereira. Yeah, she's gone 2-0 in the UFC, but that debut against Letourneau, I didn't think she won that fight. It wasn't that good of a fight. She got outstruck 2-1, won a split decision. And then against Jamie Moyle, I mean, that was way too competitive against somebody that's not really a top 15 or even close to a top 15 talent in the women's strawweight division. So, I just think Pereira is too small. If the UFC had an atomweight division, 105 pounds, which I do think they will eventually add for women, I think Pereira would be a ripe candidate to be a contender there. But at 115, this is going to be a fight where size is going to matter. Tatiana Suarez is a big, strong strawweight, and Pereira is definitely undersized. I think Suarez just bullies the hell out of her here. Pereira might be the better striker of the two, but it's not going to matter. There is just no way she keeps this fight standing. Suarez is so aggressive. Honestly, even in a division with wrestlers like Carla Esparza, great ground fighters like Claudia Gadelha and someone like Jessica Andrade, who has been just throwing girls around in the strawweight division. I still think Tatiana Suarez is actually the best wrestler in the women's strawweight division from what I've seen. And I don't think that Pereira is going to be the one to stuff her takedowns. Suarez will just impose her will on Pereira. And then once she gets top position, she can be stifling, not just with ground and pound, but guard passes. And then she works for submissions. So, I think Suarez dominates this fight. I expect her to get top position and then either get a TKO or a submission, or worst case scenario, this is 15 minutes of pain for Pereira where she just gets dominated on the ground. So my pick is definitely going to be Tatiana Suarez, and I expect this is going to be more of her coming out party after a long layoff due to injury. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a ranked bantamweight battle between John Dodson, who is 20-8, and Marlon Moraes, who is 18-5-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened this fight exactly at pick 'em, minus 120 either way. So 120 Dodson, minus 120 Moraes. Tough fight for me to pick here and to actually set a line on. Obviously, we all knew it was going to be a competitive line, but I thought I'd leave it up to all you out there to decide who the favorite's going to be. And right now, looking over Five Dimes, it's minus 110 either way. So you guys can decide either. That being said, I think it's fair. I mean, this is going to be a battle. This is going to be such a good fight. Really looking forward to it. I know Moraes disappointed a lot of people out there because in his UFC debut, he suffered a loss, and deservingly so. Since I was good in that fight, it was a close fight. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, Moraes didn't look like he can look. I mean, he was obviously the World Series of Fighting champion for a while. He faced, the best competition that he could really face outside of the UFC in that spot. So you got to give the World Series of Fighting credit. They tried to feed Moraes, as good as competition as they could. So he didn't beat exactly all bums. Moraes had some decent competition thrown at him throughout. Not UFC quite level competition, but still, some good quality opponents. And Moraes looked fantastic. Moraes was one of those fighters that just basically got better fight by fight as well. His confidence grew everything. So he deserved to get in the mix and in the heat of things and of course the bantamweight division, the UFC, and they did that. They gave him a sunset, which is one of the best bantamweight fighters he's been for a long time. And Race, lost by split decision. It was a competitive fight. He could have done better, like I said. That being said, they turn right back around and then match him with Dodson, which we all know Dodson was one of the best flyweights in the world for a long time. And even in the bantamweight division, look what he's done overall. He's been really impressive. Dodson's just a quality fighter. He's got speed. He's got power. He's got athleticism. He's a unique individual for sure. And he's just a difficult matchup for most. So this fight is a coin flip in my opinion. We really could see it going either way. Dodson has that power in his hands and he's got that explosiveness that just one punch could drop you. And then, he could flurry and follow up and end your night. Moraes, on the other hand, just the overall technical skill set that he has with his striking game. His kicks are a thing of beauty to watch, and he's got some speed. He's got some power as well. He's got some good accuracy and just across the board. And both these guys are great on the ground as well. They both have wrestling. Obviously the pure wrestling edge, in my opinion, would go to Dodson in this fight, but the jiu-jitsu edge, a pure jiu-jitsu edge actually would probably favor Moraes offensively at least. Now, it's going to be hard for these guys to catch each other, I think, in a sub, of course. And who knows if they spend too much time on the ground, because their takedown defense overall is pretty solid each way as well. If anybody's on their back, it's probably Moraes in this fight. But I think he's still able to maintain and keep the fight upright, and this becomes a striker battle. And if it does, we're going to be in for a treat, because this is going to be an elite-level striking matchup at 135 pounds. So another fight I've been going back and forth on, to be honest with you, but I'm leaning a little bit towards Moraes. I think he kind of has something to prove out there. If he beats Dodson, I think he gets a lot of that respect back that he might have lost overall, even for his own confidence, everything across the board here. Dodson would be definitely a good, guy to have on your resume for sure moving forward. So a tough fight for both guys. Like I said, I'm going to lean slightly a little bit more towards Moraes. I think his striking will work in this case and just basically – in a tight competitive decision, basically outpoint Dodson along the way and edge him out here. So the pick is Moraes, but again, how could you be confident either way? Both these guys are fantastic.
This is a tough one to pick for me. Marlon Moraes is a guy that I was hyping up huge entering his UFC debut, and then he took on Rafael Assunção, who's basically a prospect killer, and Moraes just could not get anything going. You know, his vaunted kicking game was just not there, and he basically just ho-hummed his way to a decision loss. And John Dodson, on the other hand, I've been very impressed by him. Obviously, his run at flyweight was tremendous, but just the two losses to Demetrius Johnson just was locking him out of an opportunity to become champion. So he moved up to bantamweight, and he's looked great so far. I mean, the victories over Eddie Wineland, over Manny Gamborian, and then the really close fight against John Lineker. So, I mean, what more can you do? You know, he's been going in there against some tough competition, and he's been passing with flying colors, in my opinion. So, Dodson is legit at bantamweight, and Moraes, maybe it was UFC jitters, I don't know, but he just did not look the same. And granted, he never fought like the best of competition in the World Series of Fighting, so maybe he is who we thought he was. We're going to learn a lot about him in this fight now that he got that UFC debut out of the way, but he's facing another really tough opponent, and he's going to have to prove himself all over again. So, you know, they're not going to give him gimmies with probably the contract that he signed when he came over to the UFC. So, John Dodson, I think he has better hands than Moraes. I think he has heavier hands than Moraes. So if he can land just that kill shot, maybe he could make something happen. You know, the power has translated to the bantamweight division. We saw it with the really quick Gamborian knockout, and then he even rocked John Lineker. And as far as I know, he is one of the only people that has ever stopped Lineker in his tracks with a good punch. So, you know, that should say enough, not whether alone his victory over the current champion, TJ Dillashaw. So John Dodson is an explosive athlete, so Moraes should have a bit of a tough time hanging with him in that department. Now, where Moraes has kind of the X factor is the kicks. Now, he wasn't able to get them going against a Sun Tzu, but maybe against Dodson he could. You know, Dodson isn't really known for his kicking game, and if Moraes can chop him down a little bit, that could take away some of Dodson's speed advantage. And then that could set up a finish or just allow him to work his way towards a decision. So I think this fight's very evenly matched, and I could see it going either way, but I'm slightly leaning Dodson. He's just a little bit more proven at this point. And I think Moraes, you know, he needs to step up his game a little bit against some of these top talents. And I think Dodson is going to give him a very tough test here. So my pick is going to be John Dodson. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a lightweight battle between a pair of veterans in Joe Lauzon, who is 27-14, and Clay Guida, who is 33-14. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hop in Lauzon -150, the comeback on Guida +110. Right now, looking over five times, it's Lauzon even money. So Guida is now the favorite at -120. The comeback on Lauzon is even money, like I just mentioned. So line did flip, but it's still basically a pick'em with the slight lean towards Guida now. Am I surprised with the early action? No. I mean, the path to victory for Guida is right there. I mean, we all know how he can win this fight. It's just by that grinding wrestling style that he has. I mean, he just pushes such a relentless pace. The guy's tough as nails. He's got all sorts of heart, all sorts of conditioning. He bounced back nicely in his, you know, last performance. I mean, we kind of saw a throwback performance from Guida. I mean, a lot of us believe, I mean, let's face it, he's been, again, talk about somebody being around the UFC for a long time. I mean, Guida's been around forever. And his fight against Coke, I mean, it kind of reminded me back of, you know, Guida a few years ago. I mean, he looked good. He needed to kind of have that performance, I think, to stay relevant, and he did. That being said, here against Lauzon, if he gets another win over a guy like Lauzon, which has been, again, talk about being around the UFC for a while. I mean, Lauzon has been in the UFC performing and competing against, you know, top level guys for a long time as well. But so this is basically a battle for me to see who stays relevant in the UFC lightweight division, honestly, more than anything else. But That being said, what I was getting at was if Guida can beat Lozon, that's another solid win on his resume, and you know, gets back on track, and he does stay relevant here. But just a tough matchup for me with Guida here, because regardless, wherever the fight takes place here, I think Lozon on the feet can do some damage and give Guida some difficulties and possibly end the fight. I know Guida, his chin overall throughout his career has been pretty granted. I mean, now again, he has suffered a couple of knockout losses, but that being said, I think overall, I mean, Guida's just a tough guy to stop, but if anybody could do it, I think it's a guy like Lozon. He does have some underrated power in the feet. He's able to mix things up well enough. I mean, even in the clinch, he's going to have some reach. You know, he has some advantages definitely on the feet, but even if Guida's able to put Lozon on his back, I mean, Lozon's the type of guy, and he's so slick with the submission game and his reversals that it might not be easy for Guida to kind of sit in his guard and just do what he does best. So I think Lozon's just going to be difficult, regardless of where the fight takes place for Guida. Now, can Guida survive the guard game? Possibly. I mean, excuse me, Guida's been in there with, you know, some of the best guys, you know, in the UFC, in the lightweight roster. So he's been in there with the best. So nothing that Lozon's going to throw at him he hasn't seen before. But that being said, I still think the Lozon's a difficult matchup for even a guy like Guida. So for me, I'm actually going to lean a little bit more towards the finish here. Even though I said how tough Guida is, I think Lozon could still probably get the job done along the way. And if it does hit the scorecards, I mean, if Lozon could do some damage, even if he doesn't end up finishing Guida, I think he could still see a split decision type of fight here as well. So going to go against the grain, going to go against the early action here. I think Lozon is just a little bit better right now. He's the better fighter of the two, but again, not a confident pick, but I'm going to go Lozon's way for this one.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Joe Lozon definitely has more potential for a finish. That is without a doubt. I mean, he is a better submission fighter than Clay Guida. He's got more punching power than Clay Guida. He's picked up some knockouts along the way. And Guida's definitely been more of the grinder to get wins. I mean, Guida does have a couple submissions to his credit, but for the most part, he's been a guy that wins decisions against opponents and wears them down with his pace. And for a while, we weren't seeing that Clay Guida. You know, he had a tough run in for a while at lightweight, lost several fights in a row, dropped down to featherweight, tried to make a run there. It just didn't happen. And he finally returned to lightweight in his last fight against Eric Koch. And then he just looked like a new man. I mean, that was the Clay Guida of old. I mean, he was tenacious. He was aggressive. He got his takedowns. He just was beating Koch up and he looked great. That's the Clay Guida that we need to see. Lozon, on the other hand, he has been facing some stiff competition lately, but, you know, I haven't been that impressed by what I've seen out of him. I thought Lozon looked slow and ineffective against Marcin Held. I thought the Stevie Ray fight, yeah, Lozon got some takedowns, but, you know, he clearly got outstruck in that fight, ended up losing a majority decision. And then, you know, the Jim Miller fight, Miller was doing a lot better than Lozon on the feet. Lozon again got takedowns, but, just couldn't quite get anything going enough. So, I have not been that impressed by what I've seen out of Lozon in the last year for the most part. Not since, the Diego Sanchez knockout victory. So I think if Clay Guida can just push a high pace, he might be able to wear Lozon out. Guida should be able to get takedowns against Lozon, but again, that's playing with fire because of Lozon's submission game, but Lozon isn't quite as dangerous off of his back. He's more of a guy that gets his submissions when he's the aggressor, when he's in top position, or if he hurts somebody, he dives on a submission and is extremely effective at finishing somebody that's hurt. So if Clay Guida can avoid getting hurt, I think he might be able to push the pace on the feet. And I think that he could push the pace with takedowns and either wear Lozon down or grind him out and win a decision. So I'm slightly leaning Clay Guida, although the finish is always possible with Joe Lozon in the mix. But my pick is going to be Clay Guida. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Rafael Assuncao, who is 25-5. Taking on Matthew Lopez, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Assuncao -210, the comeback on Lopez at +160. Right now, over five dimes, it's actually Assuncao -335, the comeback on Lopez +275. So, Wasn't sure how people would react here. I figured that Sun Cao would be the popular fighter. I mean, just stylistically, it's a tough matchup for Lopez. I mean, Sun Cao, again, we were just saying how good the guy is. He does have a win over Moraes that we were just talking up here a minute ago. So Sun Cao has been one of those guys that, I mean, he's been at the top of the food chain again for a long time in the bantamweight division. Just such a well-rounded fighter. He's got great stand-up. He's got a good ground game to go along with it, good takedown defense, good wrestling, everything. I mean, he's a total package. Smart fight IQ, conditioning. I mean, there's not many flaws in a Sun Cao's game at all. So this is a difficult matchup because Lopez is going to probably need to out-wrestle a Sun Cao here to get the job done, as a Sun Cao is the better striker overall on the feet. So Lopez does have a little bit of power. I mean, he is a southpaw as well. So a Sun Cao has been around the sport again for a long time. He's 35 years old now. He's not getting any younger, obviously. So you never know when that decline spot could hit. And Lopez could land something big, maybe possibly on the feet and do some damage and then possibly get a takedown and see what happens there. But outside of that, it's going to be tough. I mean, Lopez has been impressive. I think his UFC debut, he made against obviously Ronnie Yahya. That was a tough fight for anybody to make your debut against Yahya, especially a grappler like that. He gassed out a little bit. Yahya did what he did. I mean, Lopez early on in that fight was impressive, but you know, after a while, obviously Yahya was able to take control and get the job done with a choke. But since that time, his fight against Gagnon was very impressive for Lopez. I think that opened up some eyes because Gagnon was one of those fighters that a lot of people did, you know, feel that he was in high regards. And a lot of people considered, Gagnon is a very legit fighter at 135 pounds. But then following that performance up against Eduardo, like Lopez did, and able to finish a guy like Eduardo, that was impressive as well. So Lopez has some momentum on his side, and I think he's got enough knockout power on the feet that, again, this could get interesting. I mean, maybe we're counting him out. This is a head-scratcher. That's one of the reasons I opened it a little bit lower, because to me, this matchup, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I mean, the UFC did match this up. So I think this is a spot where it's just such a strange matchup that Lopez might do better than we all think here against a guy like a Sun Cao, but stylistically it shouldn't happen. So again, it's hard for me to pick against, a Sun Cao in this spot really, because I do think he is the more complete and he is the better fighter, but I don't agree with the early action. I think, you know, closer to 2-1, maybe 2.5-1 is a fair spot because Lopez is, again, one of these up and coming guys. He's 30 years old. I mean, so he's not a young buck, but that being said, MMA career wise, he is, and he is going to get better. He is getting more confidence. So you never know. I mean, this is a big step up, and I think he can, you know, if he gets a job done here, obviously he's going to be on a different level. So we'll see. It's going to be a hard test though. And I think it's a test he probably doesn't pass. So my pick is going to be a Sun Cao, but I'm hoping it's a competitive fight, a fight that is definitely worth watching and, you know, that we surprise and maybe open some eyes and hold Lopez in more of a high regard after this fight is all said and done. But the pick's a Sun Cao for sure.
Rafael Sun Cao has kind of just been a prospect killer in his UFC run. Now, he hasn't quite been able to get to an opportunity at a title shot, but I mean, you just look at some of his victories, Aljamain Sterling, Marlon Moraes, Pedro Munhoz, TJ Dillashaw early in his career. You know, Sun Cao just grinds things out. Like, he's not the most entertaining fighter. He hasn't had a fight, that didn't go the distance since 2013. A Sun Cao is effective. He's a competent striker and he has a very good ground game. And when you have those tools, it's very difficult to, you know, finish you. A Sun Cao has, the ability to strike with just about anybody in the bantamweight division, although he lacks power. But he has very good fundamentals with his stand up. And, you know, people are not going to submit him and they're likely not going to be taking him down. So, if anything, a Sun Cao would be the one potentially getting a submission because his ground game is so good. So with Matthew Lopez, I think he's got his hands full here. I mean, Lopez is a bright up and coming prospect, but, his game relies a lot on, getting fights to the floor and then dominating opponents from top position, whether it be ground and pound or guard passing or submissions. And there's just so little, chance that he's able to do that without hurting a Sun Cao on the feet first. Now that could happen. Lopez does have some pop in his hands, but he's not nearly as effective or technical of a striker as a Sun Cao. So I just don't see that happening unless, you know, he lands something out of nowhere. So basically barring, a Hail Mary type of shot that Lopez lands and hurt to Sunsal with, and then sets up something on the ground from top position. I just think Rafael Sunsal does what he does best, and that is win a ho-hum, grind it out, not that entertaining decision over another talented up-and-coming prospect. So my pick is going to be Rafael Sunsal to get the victory, most likely by decision. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Nate Marquardt, who is 38-18-2, taking on Cesar Mutants Ferreira, who is 12-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Ferreira -155, the comeback on Marquardt at +115. This has been the biggest mover of the whole card thus far. It's right now over five dimes. Ferreira -280, the comeback on Marquardt +240. So I did open this too low, obviously. This is tough. I mean, to me, I can't trust either one of these guys. I mean, you're talking about Ferreira. He's been knocked out four times in his UFC career. You're talking about Marquardt. He's been knocked out five times in his MMA career overall. This is just not a guy either way you could trust here. I mean, these guys are flawed, and it's tough because both these guys have knockout power on the feet that they could do some damage against each other here. Both these guys also have good ground games to go along with it. So this is definitely a tricky fight, but I do agree with Ferreira. I'm going to pick him, so I'll get that out of the way quickly. I don't have the confidence level that a lot of people out there seem to have in Ferreira. I mean, if he did have a chin, Ferreira would be a beast, man. I mean, he'd be a title contender at 185 pounds. There's no doubt about that. The guy has outstanding wrestling. He's able to get the fight down to the ground when he wants, usually, right? He's able to, once he's on the ground, he's got submissions he can go to. He's got ground and pound he can go to. On the feet, when he connects, the guy does damage. So Ferreira, offensively on the feet, I mean, he has some power. He can mix things up. He's got a little bit of speed to go along with it. So there's a lot to like in Ferreira's game, so I get it. But that being said, Marquardt is a veteran of the sport. I mean, I think he was done. Honestly, in my opinion, I thought Marquardt was done when we saw him just look like a shell of himself. I mean, several times recently in this UFC run that he's been on, especially in that Gaslam fight, I thought that was going to be probably the end of Nate Marquardt's career. And then he bounced back after that Gaslam fight and knocked out Dolloway. So that's what I'm talking about with him, with Marquardt. I mean, you can't count him out. He's got that knockout power. And against a chinny fighter, I mean, Dolloway is a chinny fighter. He got it. He disposed of him. You know, he got rid of him. He lost after that, and then he comes back and knocks out Marquardt after that. So, I mean, Marquardt does have enough power to catch that chin of Ferreira and put him out there. But not just that. I mean, if Marquardt has to tangle with him on the ground a little bit, I think he can survive. I mean, Marquardt obviously has a good enough ground game. He might spend some time on his back here, which could give Ferreira the nod on the cards if it goes to the cards as well. So I get it. But again, I thought it was kind of more of a fair price. So for me, it's definitely a dog or pass situation here. I wouldn't like try to actually get out there and get on Marquardt. For me, I was going to pass this fight. But now again, I mean, it's getting tempted, to be honest with you, at the price, current price of +240 against that chin of Ferreira. I mean, who knows? But again, this is not a fight I was honestly looking to bet, and I probably won't still. But I mean, if there's any time there's some value here against the opening line, it could be Marquardt is what I'm trying to spit out here. So no confidence either way for me here. I am picking Ferreira because I do think, you know, he has more upside. He's a little bit younger. I think I love his skill set offensively, but it's just defensively, and it's that chin that bothers me the most. So that's why I don't have the confidence everybody else does out there. So bottom line, I'm picking Ferreira, but you know, the sportsbooks out there are going to definitely be rooting for the dog here. And so will I, actually, even if I pick Ferreira. So the pick is Ferreira, but who knows how this fight's going to go.
Yeah, this is a battle between two guys without very good chins, although I would say Marquardt is the better striker. Ferreira is definitely a bigger danger on the ground, and Ferreira has been relying on that ground. I mean, I've talked about it. Ferreira has one of the worst chins in the UFC, but he has a stifling ground game, and he's one of the more well-rounded fighters in the middleweight division. So he's a smart fighter, and he knows to avoid leaving his chin exposed. Now, Nate Marquardt, being a savvy veteran himself, has relatively good takedown defense, and he has a pretty good ground game as well. I mean, I remember the fight against James Tahuna where, you know, Tahuna went in for a takedown and Marquardt immediately had him in a dangerous situation with an armbar, and was threatening with submissions constantly. So, don't underestimate Nate Marquardt's ground game either. Now, in this fight, you know, Ferreira has definitely had a little bit more momentum on his side with some quality victories in the middleweight division, getting fighters to the ground, working for submissions, winning decisions. But, the threat of him getting his clock cleaned is always there. And while Nate Marquardt is not the same Nate Marquardt that, you know, was once a top middleweight contender, I still think he's a dangerous fighter, and fighting in the United States, you know, potentially one of his last fights of his career, against somebody that, you know, cannot handle getting hit in the face. I think there's actually a really good chance here that Marquardt could connect with something and finish Ferreira. So I actually am going to side with Nate Marquardt here. If he can avoid being put on his back, there's a really good chance that he lands a knockout blow along the way. It's just all about him pulling the trigger and, keeping this fight upright when he can. So my pick is going to be Nate Marquardt. I'm not insanely confident about it, because how could you be with the way these guys, have been getting finished in multiple devastating ways. But, Marquardt is going to be my pick this time around. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Junior Albini, who is 14-2, taking on Andre Arlovsky, who is 25-15 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I'll put Albini -230 to come back on Arlovsky at +170. Kind of a tricky line to set. I mean, obviously, we all know the scoop here. Arlovsky being used as a gatekeeper this late in his career and to build kind of potential title contenders in the heavyweight division for the UFC. Albini coming off a very impressive win over Tim Johnson. You know, he's in that slot already in his second fight. So the current line right now over Five Dimes is -340 for Albini, and the comeback on Arlovsky +280. So most people agree that that's exactly what this situation is. Albini does have some good knockout power. Again, his resume pre-UFC, not the greatest, but you could tell he's got some skill. He's got some power on the feet. The guy has a pretty well-rounded game in his own right. At times, what bothers me about Albini is he can be a little bit inactive. He could get controlled up against the cage. I mean, if Arlovsky studies a lot of film on it and the Jackson camp and him comes up with a good game plan and his chin lasts, this could be an interesting fight for sure, because Arlovsky can make life miserable at times for Albini. But I don't think that's the case here. I think Albini's going to be able to probably catch that chin. We're talking about chinny people. I mean, Arlovsky's been knocked out 10 times in his MMA career, and Albini has enough power. I mean, Tim Johnson in his last fight, again, he just got rid of him. I mean, he knocked him out, and Tim Johnson is known for having a pretty solid chin. So I don't think this fight's going to fare too well with Arlovsky. Even if Arlovsky's hanging in there doing well at times, I think Albini is going to probably land that punch and get Arlovsky out of there. So I don't think this fight does hit the scorecard, so that's unfortunate, because I think Arlovsky takes another L here and gets knocked out again. So again, I hope Arlovsky decides to hang him up here soon, because again, I've said this time and time again on different podcasts, but I believe that it's time for him to hang him up, because I don't want to see the guy keep on getting knocked out here. So we'll see. I mean, Arlovsky obviously in his last fight did not, you know, suffer a knockout loss, and he was in a competitive decision over another up-and-coming guy in Tabura, so got to give him credit there, but I still don't trust it. So the pick is Albini, and more than likely by knockout.
Yeah, plain and simple, this is the UFC hoping Junior Albini can get a little bit of a rub off of a former champion. Andre Arlovsky has lost 5 straight fights in the UFC, and the only reason he's in this fight, what's even in the UFC, is to get fed, at least what they're hoping for, to a younger up-and-coming heavyweight. Albini is a good striker. He's exciting. He's got power. And if Arlovsky doesn't get knocked out, I'd be shocked. I really would. As Nick mentioned, he's been knocked out a ton. He almost got knocked out by Tabura, and Tabura almost punched himself out trying to finish him after he hurt him. But, you know, he ended up holding on and winning a decision. I don't think this goes to decision. Albini has heavy hands, as Nick mentioned. Tim Johnson, tough out. Albini just destroyed him. And I expect that this does not end pretty. And even though Albini is a bit untested still, and this is clearly the toughest opponent he's ever faced in his entire career, I think he passes this test with flying colors, especially just with the way Arlovsky's been fighting and the momentum that he has in his career right now, which is on quite the downswing. So my pick is going to be Junior Albini. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have Matt Brown, who is 22-16 in his retirement fight, taking on Diego Sanchez, who is 29-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Brown -260 to come back on Sanchez at +180. Right now we're 5 dimes. It is Brown -350 to come back on Sanchez +290. So line margins have tightened up. More action coming in Brown's way. I get it. I understand it. I agree with it. I think that this is obviously Brown's retirement fight, and I think stylistically it's kind of a tough matchup for Sanchez. Sanchez is going to need to wrestle. He's moving back up to 170 pounds. I should say that right away. He's been fighting obviously at 155 pounds, even dropped down to 145 pounds, which I thought was a mistake. But now he's back up all the way to 170 and giving Matt Brown his goodbye fight here. And I think it is stylistically a good matchup, like I said, for Brown, because I think his takedown defense is probably good enough in most cases to keep this fight upright. And on the feet, Brown has a big advantage over Sanchez. I know Sanchez is a warrior. You can never count the guy out. He does have a little bit of power on the feet. And again, he is a southpaw. And Brown seems to be obviously a decline fighter in his own right as well. So both these guys are not at, you know, the best condition, the best, at the best fighting shape right now, as far as overall, you know, they've had those wars throughout their careers. So they're definitely on the decline. And I think it's a good decision for Brown to kind of hang him up. I mean, the guy's given us nothing but wars and just awesome fights. I mean, the guy's had a heck of a UFC career. So hats off to Matt Brown, because I think he's one of the funnest fighters I've ever seen, compete in a UFC octagon, just a warrior and, just awesome to watch every time out. So I think he ends up finishing Sanchez in this fight. Honestly, I think it's a goodbye win for him. I think he gets it in highlight reel fashion. And Sanchez is a tough dude to stop. But I think, again, I mean, this is a 35-year-old Diego Sanchez moving back up to welterweight against a guy that's looking to get a highlight reel knockout to finish his career off. So I think he gets it. Diego is going to bounce back and obviously continue fighting more than likely after, I think, what is a loss here, and we'll see what he does from here on out. But I think for Brown, he retires on top, and good for him. Like I said, I'm glad to see it. So the pick is Brown and probably inside the distance.
Yeah, I just think this is a bad matchup for Diego Sanchez. Matt Brown, even though he's retiring, I mean, this guy is just a killer against people that he can kind of force into his style of fight. And Diego Sanchez just doesn't really have the tools to keep Matt Brown from dictating how this fight goes. Brown is very good if he can close the distance and just start working you over. He has heavy hands. He has good knees. He has good elbows. His Muay Thai is excellent. And Diego Sanchez, you know, he kind of relies on just being tough and having a lot of heart. And in the early days, his wrestling was advanced, but as the UFC started adding real, legitimate wrestlers, his wrestling has kind of been exposed. I mean, really, he has not been able to take most top fighters down anymore, unless they start to gas. So I don't see Diego Sanchez taking Matt Brown down, and if he does, I don't see him keeping him down. Matt Brown should have a good enough defensive game to avoid anything happening if he does get taken down. I mean, Matt Brown almost survived 15 minutes with Damian Maia on his back. So I don't see Diego Sanchez getting a finish or anything crazy here. And Diego Sanchez, his chin has started to crack a little bit. I mean, you got to remember, you know, this was a guy that was one of the toughest fighters in the history of the sport. And then recently Joe Lozon finished him on the feet. Alia Quinta destroyed him. So I think this is, you know, not a good situation for Diego Sanchez. I mean, if those guys destroyed him, him moving up a weight class to take on a guy in Matt Brown that is known for just being downright vicious at times is a bit scary. So I think Matt Brown probably finishes Diego Sanchez in violent fashion, but there's also the possibility that Diego pulls something out. I mean, Matt Brown looked like he was on his way to beating Jake Ellenberger, and then he got blasted out of nowhere. So, you know, Brown's chin is starting to crack a little bit as well. And that's probably why he's deciding to call it quits when he is. He's kind of getting ahead of the curve a little bit. So With all that being said, I think Matt Brown should be able to stuff Diego Sanchez's takedowns, and he should just be the better overall striker here with more power and more durability. And I expect that he wins by knockout at some point against Sanchez to ride off on the white horse for his retirement. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. In the lightweight division, we have Dustin Poirier, who is 21-5 with one no contest, taking on the former champion Anthony Showtime Pettis, who is 20-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Pettis, minus 140, the comeback on Poirier, even money. Right now looking for five dimes. It's Pettis, minus 120, the comeback on Poirier, even money. So line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action on this fight as well. Line seems to be appropriately set. We'll see where the action goes. You know, we still got, like I said, midweek, so we still got a long ways to go. And there's going to be some heavy action coming in this fight along with a lot of others, so we'll see. But I do think it's a slight edge towards Pettis. That's what I'm saying. I think the line's accurate here. I mean, both these guys we know have been – I mean, outstanding, again, top-tier fighters, whether it's at featherweight, whether it's at lightweight. Poirier started his UFC career actually at lightweight and then dropped down to featherweight and had a lot of success at featherweight and then bounced up to lightweight, of course. Pettis kind of started the opposite way, went from lightweight to featherweight. I think the weight cut, obviously, for Pettis was a little bit too much. I mean, he performed – I mean, he was kind of a shell of himself, even despite the win over even Oliveira or whatnot. I mean, Pettis was not the same fighter. So bouncing back to 155 pounds, I think he is a better version of what we're used to. And I think his conditioning, his cardio, his chin, everything's going to hold up a lot better at 155 pounds. So I'm glad to see him make the move back up. But this fight overall, man, I mean, both these guys are talented. Both these guys have knockout power on the feet. Obviously, Poirier has a little bit more power. Pettis is more of the sniper. Pettis has the better kicking game. Poirier probably has a little bit better boxing. And again, like I just mentioned, a little bit more pure knockout power. But the wrestling is going to kind of be back and forth a little bit as well. I'm saying that a lot of people probably think Poirier has the better wrestling. He might. I mean, he's probably going to use it a tad more than Pettis does, obviously. But let's not forget, Pettis at times, he can surprise you with some takedowns in his own right. So wouldn't be surprised if we see both guys shooting for takedowns here. But overall, I think they stuff each other and they keep the fight upright. And that's where it's going to be fun. And that's where it's going to be interesting because, again, Poirier is the guy that is going to hit a little bit harder. I think his aggression is going to be pushing forward a little bit, and Pettis is going to be the one having to pick him off and pick him apart a little bit and land some strikes and hopefully get the job done. But it's tough. I mean, I could see this fight going either way as well. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Pettis. I think I trust his chin just a tad more at this point, even though, again, I mean, Pettis hasn't obviously looked the greatest recently. I still think that that sniper ability that he has, I mean, he's just so accurate with his punches and his kicks. I mean, I could see a head kick here landing on Poirier and possibly putting him out. So I just think that I trust his chin just a little bit more, especially at lightweight, and Poirier still is the type of fighter that at times he's a little bit more of a front runner. He does tend to slow down as the fight progresses a little bit and lets people back in a fight. I mean, Eddie Alvarez is a good example of that. He should have had that fight done and out. I mean, and Alvarez, credit Alvarez for surviving and being so tough, but, you know, Poirier, you know, let him get back in the fight and made it a little bit more interesting. But that being said, against Pettis, he can't do that. I think Pettis' conditioning at 155 pounds is a lot better off than it was at 145 pounds. So we'll see how it works out. I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence either way because, again, you have two of the best fighters, you know, at lightweight, at featherweight, regardless. I mean, two top-tier fighters going at it here. They both have so much skill, so much finishing ability, and who knows where they are at this stage of their career. So the slight lean towards Pettis, I think the line's accurate. I'm going to pick that way as well. But again, not a confident pick, but I'm hoping it's an exciting fight.
Man, there's so many intangibles with this fight. I mean, Anthony Pettis looks a lot better after returning to the lightweight division. That was a strong performance against Jim Miller. In his return, I thought his stand-up looked sharp. He was aggressive. You know, it was a different Anthony Pettis than what we'd kind of seen during that run where, you know, he lost the title to Dos Anjos, then lost a decision to Eddie Alvarez due to wrestling, and then just got out flat out outstruck by Edson Barboza to lose three in a row. Now, this time around against Poirier, Pettis is going to need to bring that aggression back or at least have some very good counter-striking because I expect Poirier to put the pressure on Pettis. Poirier is an aggressive, heavy-hitting lightweight. He likes to move forward. He has heavy hands. and he throws them effectively. I mean, this guy has legitimate knockout power. I mean, he has finished multiple fighters throughout the course of his career, but I mean, most notably, the destruction of Bobby Green, Yancy Medeiros, Diego Ferreira, you name it. Even back in the featherweight division, I mean, he was really racking them up. I was impressed with the Diego Brandão knockout. So, Dustin Poirier is a guy that is definitely capable of doing some serious damage if you don't hold him off. Now, chin strength has been an issue for Poirier. I mean, he gets knocked out when he loses. Conor McGregor knocked him out. Most recently, Michael Johnson knocked him out. That's his one loss in the lightweight division. So Pettis, though, he's not really known for having heavy hands. I mean, he's known for having a diverse skill set, for having a great kicking game. And he has finished multiple fighters with very strong kicking attack. The head kick of Joe Lozon, the body kicks to Donald Cerrone to set up a finish. So, he's clearly capable of finishing, but I think if Poirier can pressure Pettis and just stay in his face, it's going to make that kicking game a lot less effective. Pettis has still had quite a bit of problems throughout his career dealing with fighters that force him to fight off of his back foot and kind of back him into the fence. Pettis has still not quite learned how to circle away from aggression properly because he does get backed into a fence repeatedly. It happened in the Alvarez fight. It happened in the Gilbert Melendez fight, although he ended up coming back in that one. So I think if Poirier can put Pettis on his back foot and work him towards the fence, maybe unload some combinations, there's going to be a good chance that Poirier could do some damage here. Now, with this being a 5-round fight, Poirier does tend to slow down. I think that could be a factor as well. Pettis has started to slow down in fights too, but I thought he looked pretty good against Jim Miller. So if this goes to decision, Pettis could come on strong late. But if it gets finished, I think Poirier might have a chance to put Pettis away. I mean, we saw Max Holloway take out Pettis, and we've seen Pettis take a lot of damage during that losing streak, so he might not be that same fighter in the lightweight division. And the one thing is, with even though Poirier has had some issues with his chin, haven't really seen much out of Pettis in terms of knockout power up high, unless he's landing a kick. So if Poirier can avoid the kicking game, I think there's actually a decent chance that he could outwork Anthony Pettis and either get a knockout along the way or maybe even a decision, although that's easier said than done. So my pick is going to be Dustin Poirier. I'm not insanely confident about it just because of the chin and the fact that it is a 5-round fight, but I believe in Poirier, and I think that the pressure and spacing is going to be a huge factor in this fight. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 120. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at @MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.